to another episode of the Rebel Radio Podcast, and this is Mark.
This is Matt.
This is Mary.
Whoa, what's that? There's a new voice, and it's not a dude voice.
Yeah, it's got higher pitched. Yeah.
Mary is my wife. You've decided to join me for a podcast after 111 episodes.
Yeah, pretty much.
112 is the magic number.
Yeah, because this is episode 112.
Yes, and I know that because last episode it was 111.
And she just decided this like this morning because like we're doing one of her favorite movies.
Heck yeah, dude.
And so she was like, there's going to be a lot of dude in this episode.
I almost wore my robe up here, but I thought that'd be weird.
Thank you for not, man. Thanks.
Frank would have probably tried that.
Frank probably would.
Like boxers in a robe or something.
No, he would have been naked underneath, let's be honest.
And then he'd have that weird laugh. You know how he laughs.
So how's y'all's weeks, man?
So far, so good. It was rainy yesterday, kind of a little bit. And then it was really rainy the day before that.
That seems to be the theme in our city the last couple weeks.
Rain.
More
rain.
Go away.
And more rain.
Did you guys get rained out in the game yesterday?
No, they played yesterday and they won. So.
Oh, that's good.
20-0.
That's right. I saw the pick. You took them to Chick-fil-A. Yep,
20-0.
There we go. No,
it wasn't Chick-fil-A.
PDQs.
PDQs. It looked like maybe it was Chick-fil-A.
I might argue might be better than Chick-fil-A, at least when it comes to tenders and chicken nuggets,
but not the over service where they have like 15 people before you even get to the window and they're like, here, let me give you this,
and
let
they always tell you know your name.
Well, yeah,
beautiful you look.
Yeah, and they always say it's a pleasure to serve you.
Yes.
And then sometimes these young chicks will work there and I'm thinking, yeah, it would be a pleasure.
yeah
really.
So Mary, welcome to the Rebel Radio
thanks
podcast.
For having me finally.
How was your week,
man? We did the same things this week, so.
No, we didn't, because you had a doctor's appointment. We won't talk about that.
Well, yeah.
I didn't have to go through that.
Where no man goes.
Yes.
Except for one man.
The dude?
So. Maybe. I was asleep.
Yeah, our week wasn't overly exciting, other than a typical football week and practice and doctor's appointments and work. That's not
And a Facebook back and forth tirade in the movie podcast group about Kathleen Kennedy.
Yeah, we'll talk about that in the news.
Yeah.
Jedi haters. So anyway, so let's get the show started. At the beginning of the show, we always tell people what we downloaded, watched, streamed this week, and this is what we call download this. So what have you watched or streamed this week?
You know, Creed 2 is coming out in November, and Jackie hasn't really seen any of the Rocky movies, so I thought it might be a good idea.
Wait,
yeah.
What? How does she never seen any?
Never has. And it's,
I'm offended.
So I went ahead and I rented Rocky 1 because I don't own any Rocky movies except for Creed, because for a long time, they just came on TV, and they still come on TV. Yeah.
The box set is cheap. You can get all six of them for like $20 on Blu-ray.
Yeah, and I think that's what I'm going to have her buy me for Christmas or something. But so, you know, we watched Rocky 1, and... You know, it starts off slow, but you know, especially for you know movies nowadays, there isn't like constant punching or
it's a character
drama.
Building movie.
Yeah, and I told her it's, you know, it's kind of like Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone. You got to set the background, you know, what he's doing and what led up to his big moment. One in a million shot, the Italian Stallion, stuff like that. And it was, you know, it's still, you know, it's a movie that still holds up today. She thought it was okay, but I told her you really have to get to Rocky IV.
I wouldn't even say that. I think 2 gets you pumped up enough.
Yeah, 2. And then, you know, 3 is a different kind.
Because 4 is way overrated.
You think 4 is overrated?
I like where they're going with it in Creed 2, but 4 is overrated. It's an hour and a half montage of training and then a fight at the end.
Doesn't that movie just want to make you go work out, like in a stable?
Not really.
Matt, just because you're seeing Eye of a Tiger in your underwear doesn't mean everybody does.
Hey, it's Burning Heart. It's the first two Survivor saying Burning Heart.
The first two films are fantastic.
Yeah.
3 is okay, and 4 is okay. I think 4 is way overrated.
3
came out at a time during the Cold War, so they played up the Russian versus USA thing.
Rocky single-handedly ends the Cold War in Rocky 4.
But I do like it, but it's still overrated. It's not that great of. It's an okay Rocky movie.
You know what? I am entertained by 5. I don't. You know, it's obviously the weakest Rocky movie, probably.
Oh, yeah. And then they completely threw it out the window with Rocky Balboa.
Yeah, they did.
Like, where did his brain damage go?
Exactly.
Oh, and all of a sudden, it disappeared.
Oh, he is healed.
Instead, he has cancer in Creed.
Yes.
But, you know, So I went a different route. So you got her into Rocky.
Yes.
So now you have to continue on.
Yeah, we have to continue on, and I just need to catch this block of Rocky movies, because after we watched it, I go into the room, and I'm like, okay,
on Netflix and Hulu for a while.
So, yeah, they're playing on DirecTV right now. I forget which channel, but I turn it on, and I just hit the guide, and I guess in that span of channels wherever I'm at, it showed that Rocky III was more than halfway playing, and then Rocky IV was right afterwards, and then Rocky V, and I was like, where was this? I was like, maybe a few hours ago, I could have just started playing this channel, and I wouldn't have had to spend, $3 on a 48-hour rental.
I honestly like two. That's my personal favorite.
Yeah.
But, man, Creed is good. It might be up there as a top Rocky movie, too. I'm looking forward. We'll talk the trailer in a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
For the sequel in the news brief.
So what about you guys?
Ladies first. I rented Solo because we weren't sure when we were going to buy it. And
well, she hadn't seen it yet.
I hadn't seen it. It was really... I liked it. It wasn't as good as the other ones that just recently came out, but
it's a fun adventure movie.
Yeah, it is.
I like it. It's a simplified Star Wars film, but it's a fun. It's I like the grittiness of it. It's more like the original trilogy. Everything's dirty and dungy.
Yeah,
and it fits more in with the original films than it does even the new films.
And Chewbacca rips off an arm.
Yeah,
two arms.
Yeah. Yes,
and Glover is great as Lando. He's charismatic. I still love the scene. Like, it always bothered me as a kid in Empire Strikes Back where he calls him Han. It's like, did Billy Dee Williams not know how to say Han? So they make a joke of that where he calls him Han. He goes, no, it's Han. He goes, okay, Han. And then you know why he called him Han. I thought that was funny. So that's why he calls him Han.
Make something to toss back to.
Yeah.
And, of course, the cameo by Darth Maul is cool. Ray Park.
I just hope they make a sequel to Solo now, because they allude to this whole other underground Crimson Dawn society that, and then Han, of course, at the end of the film is leaving to go see a gangster, which we know is Jabba the Hutt. So
yeah,
hopefully it does well on Blu-ray sales and stuff, because it wasn't as big as a failure as they let on.
No.
So maybe we'll get a sequel eventually, and because I'd like to see more adventures of Solo and Chewbacca and Lando.
That would be fun.
It would be cool. But that's pretty much what I downloaded, stream, watched this week also as well, was
Solo.
Other than the movie we're fixing to talk about today. So that's it for Download This, I think.
I think, yeah, until next Download This.
Yeah.
I didn't do anything other than that.
Yeah, I mean.
Uneventful week for me as far as
downloading. Well, and then early in the week, the Astros were chasing the division title, had to watch the Astros and see if they were going to do it, and of course they did. And now we're waiting for the playoffs to start next Friday.
And we beat the record.
Yeah, and we have a franchise record for wins now. So that's
good. With the win against the Orioles last night, or just overall?
The win last night.
Okay.
So, all right, well, let's get into today's feature film. It is 1998's The Big Lebowski, which celebrated its 20th anniversary earlier this year, because it was a March of 98 release that no one really saw when it came out.
No.
It was not a huge box office hit. Directed, of course, by the Coen brothers, who... Joel and Ethan Coen over the years have developed a status of being cult directors. They made a lot of really accessible films for audiences, like True Grit. No Country for Old Men was a huge hit for them. They made Raising Arizona. But they've also made a lot of films that weren't so accessible for people that have become cult status films, like Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? And this film, The Big Lebowski. So they made a few films like that kind of went under the radar, but got the respect they deserved years later. And this is definitely the pure definition of a cult classic movie.
Yeah, pretty much, the same underlying theme in a lot of the Coen brothers films. It's about money and what people do whenever they come into it, pretty much. No Country for Old Men, if I remember, that's where it comes into $2 million.
I think so.
Yeah. And, just what happens after that and how it changed them. Same thing here, pretty much. And I think this movie has gotten more popular over time.
When was the first time you saw this?
I want to say I saw it like 2005, 2006, like almost 10 years after it came out. At first I didn't really get it. It was kind of confusing at first. And I think that's just because I wasn't paying attention. And now that I'm older, it's like I kind of get it. And I see the comedy in it, even though... At first glance, you probably don't get the comedy, but then when you watch it again, you see where it lies inside the film, the dialogue. Yeah. Mary, you've seen this film like tons of times, right?
Yeah, I've watched it a lot. I mean, I didn't watch it obviously when it first came out because I was a little kid, but probably about the same time that you watched it, that I first saw it, and I was like, what the hell is this? And I mean, it gave me a few chuckles, and I didn't really understand what it was about. And then you watch it more and more, and you're like, this is actually really genius, you know? The whole story from beginning to end.
It starts with the rug. In fact,
pissed on rug.
Yeah, I mean. That rug actually got the Coen brothers put on like a magazine cover. And no, it was funny just how it played out. They asked him, they're like, sure, yeah, we'll pose for your magazine cover. It was some, I forget which rug magazine it was, but apparently that rug was actually a really nice Persian rug that they had used in the movie, or something like it was out there, and they decided to make a thing of it. And it was something at the time. But now it's a forgettable fact, but something interesting.
It's I didn't know about that.
Yeah, they made a big deal out of this rug, just like the dude did.
No, I mean, I got they made a big deal. I just didn't know it was like on a magazine cover rug company. Yeah. That's hilarious.
Yeah, I was probably about a few years after it came out. I remember renting this movie, and because always been a big film guy, and I remember renting it and hearing about it and not thinking much of it when I originally watched it. Like, okay, it was all right. And then I started hearing about how people were really liking the movie, and I watched it. I probably rediscovered it recently in the last several years, probably through Mary, because was a big fan. And I see the genius in it now. And it's a great cast with Jeff Bridges, John Goodman, Steve Buscemi, John Turturro. It's always hard to say his name. And a really good supporting cast around these
Philip
big
Seymour
actors.
Hoffman.
Yeah, Philip Seymour Hoffman in the early days.
Yeah.
And
Tara Reid. I was like, at first I was like, who is that? I was like, that girl looks familiar. And Jackie's like, you don't know who that is? And I'm like, oh, that's Tara Reid.
Yeah, and the Coen brothers are always good at casting really great character actors in their movies. And I don't even know if I'd call Jeff Bridges a character actor because he's done so much over the years. Now, Goodman is very much
a
classical character actor. And he's excellent in this movie. Well, everyone's really good at this movie.
Yeah.
And that's one thing you first notice when you watch this, that in a lot of Coen brother movies, that people believe in what they're doing when they make these movies. And something about the Coen brothers, they're able to get these really good performances out of actors for dialogue that's sometimes borderline ridiculous, confusing, not your ordinary teleplay of a film, you know, but somehow they are able to bring out the best.
It's like, look at your golden rule for dialogue. Don't put anything in there that's not going to further the plot or the development of the film. And yet Walter causes the group to go back and forth so many times. But dude, you don't have a point. Well, the reason is, I have a point. And he's like, I'm right. And it's like, you just say yes. Cause Walter's just like, you know, he doesn't take any crap unless it's from his ex-wife.
And this movie took some flack for that as being a Pulp Fiction wannabe, and it's really not.
No, it's not.
The Coen brothers and the way they do dialogue is completely different than Quentin Tarantino. Quentin Tarantino, for one, can't cut a fucking line of dialogue for the life of him. He has to leave everything in the film.
Yeah.
And it causes sometimes his movies to drag and flow, where the Coen brothers are able to write dialogue as if the three of us were having a conversation, so it flows better.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just there to make a long, dragged-out scene. It's like three buddies talking, and it very much is between Donnie, Walt, and the dude. But yet Donnie is ignored drastically through most of the film.
And the dude really ignores him.
Yeah.
And then Walter just berates him.
He acknowledges him twice in the whole film.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Walter just tells him, shut up all the time, berates
him. You're out of your element, Donnie.
He makes him just follow him everywhere he goes. Yes. Come on, Donnie, follow me.
And it's funny because they really care about bullying, but yet Donnie's the only one who really cares.
Yeah.
Like, he takes it seriously. Like, I'm on a roll today, and they're over there like, yeah, whatever. They're talking about all this other shit that has nothing to do with bowling, but yet they're in this league together.
And you never see the dude bowl.
Nope.
Not one time.
Yeah, even though he carries around this bowling ball, same as Walter. And, all we get is a golf reference from him.
Right.
It makes you wonder if the dude's just there because of Walter making him.
So,
it could be.
So essentially, the plot of the film, to get people caught up, even though you've probably watched it, is Jeff Bridges plays the dude, and he's at home, and these guys come in, and they mistake him for another Jeff Lebowski, and they think he owes them money. They put his head in the toilet, and he's like, "What the hell's going on?" And they realize at this point they have the wrong Lebowski, and so they decide to pee on his rug, just for the hell of it, because they're bad guys. So they're bowling, and Walt convinces the dude that, yeah, you can't just take that, man. You got to go find this real Jeff Lebowski and get some compensation for it, essentially. So, and then all hell Well, I would say all kinds of zaniness breaks loose from this point on.
Yeah, he shows up at the Big Lebowski's house, and Philip Seymour Hoffman is showing him around, and he shows up, and he's like, how can I help you, sir? And he's like, well, you know, these guys, they came over, they peed on my rug, you know. And he's like, am I supposed to, you know, replace every rug that's peed upon in this city? And basically calls him a bum. Instead of talking about the rug, he compares him to an unacceptable social status and lifestyle that he has chosen, and tells him that his revolution is over and the bums have lost and get out of his room. And so after he kicks him out, you know, Philip Seymour Hoffman, Brandt, asks him, you know, so what did he say? Oh, he said I could have any rug in the house. And so, you know, he's walking out of the house, and that's whenever we meet his wife of, you know, one third year of his age, Tara Reid, Bunny, who offers to pleasure him orally for $1,000.
He's like,
but $100 extra. Yeah, he's like, let me find a cash machine. Well, which they deleted a scene from this film that explains how he has the money that he has left, as you know, they deleted a scene saying that he got money from the Rubik's Cube. The owner of the Rubik's Cube left him some money, and then that's how.
I thought that was the main Lebowski.
No, that's him. But they cut that one, and he does explain some stuff later on in the Julianne Moore scene.
But it also refers to that he's so broke that when he writes the check, he postdates it for like a year later.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's. And then people thought that was a, you know, the 1991. And George H.W. Bush, 10 years before 9/11, they thought that was... And then Saddam's in the film, of course. So
yeah.
There's like, oh, man, this film predicted something. I was like, no, it's just the dude,
there's all kinds of crazy
man.
Theories about this movie.
It's the dude.
I mean, there's a whole church based around this movie, so that should tell you a lot right there.
Yes.
So from there, the film unfolds, and they get into all kinds of trouble. So Walt, who, again, Walt is essentially, as much as the movie's about the dude... Without Walt, this film, the movie doesn't go where it goes.
No.
Because he causes everything to go wrong because his mouth and his PTSD from Vietnam gets him into all kinds of trouble. And he decides, well, let's keep the money. Screw those guys. And he comes up with this whole plot to keep the ransom money. And that doesn't work out so well.
Yeah, so the ransom money. So they call Lebowski back because the plan is to give him this ransom money because Bunny is supposedly kidnapped. And... he wants him to be able to identify if these are the two guys that ran that messed up his apartment and peed on his rug. He'll be able to identify them, and if not, then you know it is what it is.
No
but
loss.
They give him the money and this portable phone and send him off. And like you said, Walter, he you know has this idea to where he's going to bring this ringer, which is a bag full of his used underwear, and he's going to throw it out there, you know, whenever these guys ask for it. Now, Jeff Bridges is supposed to be by himself,
right?
But, you know, then he almost messes it up by saying, I'm not going to drive and throw this thing out by myself. So against against the dude's wishes, Walter throws out this ringer and, you know, jumps out of the car, and I'm just like confused at this point. I was very confused why he's jumping out of the car. It's probably part of his PTSD. And then the gun goes off and like shoots out the taillight and maybe the tire, and then Jeff Bridges crashes, but they take off and they don't come back. You know, the nihilists take off on the motorcycles and don't come back. And from then they go back to the bowling alley. They're like, fuck it, let's go bowling. And from then, they find out that their car is stolen.
Right.
After they walk out of the bowling alley with the $1 million that they had in the car. And now it is gone.
Then he gets the car back, and the money's gone, and they find this homework assignment, so they think it's this kid.
Yes.
And that's just a really funny... There's no point in this scene in the movie, seemingly.
There really isn't.
They go visit this kid, and they blame him for it, and the kid never even responds.
He's just comatose, man.
They think he spent the money on a sports car across the street, so Walter again gets into trouble by destroying his brand new sports car.
What's that quote? What's that quote that he says while he's hitting the car?
I don't remember.
This is what you get for fucking a stranger in the ass. And he just keeps repeating it.
Over and over again.
And it turns out it's not the kid's car. It's the neighbor's car.
The neighbor comes out, and he beats the dude's car.
With the crowbar.
Everything that happens to the dude is a result of Walter, but yet he doesn't get mad at it. Like, he gets kind of mad, but the dude is so chill that he's just like, whatever, man. He just goes on about his business.
Man. And then after that, doesn't... Yeah, he comes back home, and is that when it... No, no. That's whenever he gets the call from Julianne Moore's character, And she explains that her father, you know, that's his daughter. Yeah. The Big Lebowski's her daughter. Her father. Jeez, I'm getting mixed up. But so it turns out that you know, he doesn't have any money, and she has his rug.
All their money's in charity.
Yeah. All their money's in charity. So he's finding out a little bit more, and then he shows them this porno tape that Bunny made with this nihilist guy. And it's just pretty comedic, you know. The nihilist guy comes in and he's wearing this white jumpsuit, and he's a cable guy. And she's like, "Oh, my friend's in the shower. Don't mind her." And he walks out, and then the girl walks out of the shower all naked. She's like, "Well, you can see what you can just determine what comes from after here." And he's like, he fixes the cable, and
right.
I thought that part was pretty funny because he's just like, Yeah, nothing adult happens here. But yeah, so they're making like bad porno movies.
Right. And they had this whole scheme. It turned out the bunny worked for them. So the whole idea was to get money from her husband, the Big Lebowski, even though it was all an extortion plot essentially.
Yes. And so he ends up, how does he end up in Jackie Treehorn? He goes and finds Jackie Treehorn, right?
Well,
where she
They find him. Yeah.
That's right. And he's sitting in Jackie Treehorn's office trying to explain what's going on, where the money is. He gets a phone call, and then he walks off. Jackie Treehorn, if you remember him, he's the bad guy from Roadhouse.
Right.
That is running the whole town, and everyone has to pay up to him. And he walks off, and it's funny. It's Jeff Bridges' character. He thinks he's going to do some cool detective work, and he's going to sketch on the notepad, and it's really just a drawing of a guy with a big old penis, right. Something that
apparently, you know. Jeff Bridges really drew.
Yeah, yeah. And he's like, okay, I guess this was redundant, so he goes, and he sits back down, and Treehorn gives him another Caucasian that is spiked, and he has a weird, trippy dream while Wu and the other guy that were originally there ransack his apartment, and try and find any money that may be hiding there.
Right.
So the dream sequence is just friggin' hilarious.
Yeah, it's really weird.
And then, yeah, just very odd. It's really hard to describe, but the dance is very awesome. Right. Jeff Bridges dancing, Saddam Hussein handing him the bowling shoes, and he's in the cable outfit.
That's what I was going to say. I was like, you mean in Jeff Bridges in a cable man outfit? Like, yeah. How can you go wrong?
And he's helping Julianne Moore bowl, and just sliding under girls' skirts, and they're wearing these pinheads as hats. And he comes to, and he's in a sheriff's office, which I think this is another waste dialogue part. We never see the sheriff beforehand. But he gets threatened, and he goes back to the home. It's ransacked, and there Julianne Moore is.
Maud is her character.
Yeah, Maud. And she takes off her robe and says, let's do it. And then he finds out that the only reason she sent him to the doctor earlier was that she wanted him to, you know, be healthy enough to get, so she can conceive his child. And he nearly spits out his white Russian whenever she's like, oh yeah, she's like, are you doing yoga? She's like, no, this ensures, you know, conception. He's like, no, don't worry, I don't want you involved. Oh, okay. But yeah, there's so many, and then he walks out of there, and then now there's a private investigator of Bunny's family trying to find Bunny, and it's like there's all these themes that are like underlying now.
And then at this point, they find out there was no money in the briefcase.
Yeah,
Big Lebowski had fooled them the whole time because he had no money. All his money was put into charity by his ex-wife. So at this point, they just like screw it. It's all over anyway. They're at the bowling alley, and that's when the nihilists show back up.
Yes.
Yeah, because we're almost to the end of the film here.
Yeah, pretty much. And, you know, there's some other themes, like the bowling competition that we never really get to see. And Walter refuses to work on Shaba Shuba or whatever that is, Scuba Steve Day.
And Sam Elliott's character, of course, plays the stranger, which kind of narrates the film. And he always is talking about the bowling tournament, but we never see it, you know.
And then there's, you know, this, like you said, we're at the end of the film. Walter does some crazy stuff to the Big Lebowski once they find out and they confront him. He's like, I've seen spinal injuries before.
They go to his house. Yeah.
This guy, he can walk. And so he picks him up, cracks his back, and throws his ass on the ground.
And they just were looking at him like,
what are you doing, man?
What the hell are you doing?
Man, dude.
Because the dude, as much as it's funny, he's as much as he's caught up in all this, he's really just trying to just live his life and do the right thing.
He really
doesn't
is.
Really want to do any of it.
No.
But Walter somehow convinces him to go and ask for his money for his rug in the first place and somehow gets him involved in all this and because he trusts in his friends and their beliefs. But yet, at the same time, the dude just wants to live his life.
That's it.
You know?
And, you know, it's not that he doesn't care because, like, you see it throughout the film whenever, right. you know, he's like, oh, they're going to kill this poor girl if we don't do it. And he's like, Walter's like, she probably sent that letter.
Yeah.
That's not really her toe.
Yeah. The bloody toe.
But Walter's right the whole time.
Yeah.
You know, because it turns out it's not her toe. She did really kidnap herself, and her friends did anyway.
Yeah.
Set it all up. And if you think about that, Walter is right the entire time.
As crazy as he is, he's just like, that's not her toe, man. You can't go on about her toe. It's not hers.
Yeah, and so we have this ridiculous fight scene at that bowling alley where the nihilists are like, give us the $1 million. And he's like, look, man, we already know that it was fake and it was set up. And he's like, well, give us whatever you have then.
I'll fuck you in the ass.
Yes. Like, yeah, dude. And so he's like, or cut off your balls. There's all this bald cut off stuff. And
in fact, the scene is on the screen right now on TV.
Walt just cracks him in the back.
Yeah, with the bowling ball. You know, he starts off by throwing the bowling ball in the bag at the first guy, hits him in the nuts.
We got a man down, dude.
Oh, yeah, and he ends up, you know, Donnie, which is the sad part, he ends up having a heart attack.
Yeah.
They shot Donnie, dies. Man.
Yeah.
He's like, no, there's no gunfire.
There's no gunfire. It's a heart attack.
Paramedics, dude.
So Donnie, Steve Buscemi's character, ends up dying. And there's an argument with the funeral home as to what he's like, what? He's like, $180 for an urn? He's like, well, you know, we have to transport it. He's like, well, it doesn't have to be in that. And they're like going back and forth. And
it's like, go buy a coffee can.
Yeah, he got a coffee can. And so they put it in a coffee can and they go to spread his ashes.
Which is a darkly funny scene where it turns into this whole rant about Vietnam.
Yes. He's like, Donnie liked to bowl. He loved to bowl.
And then he just goes off.
Yeah, about Vietnam. And then he throws the ashes out and gets Jeff Bridges in the face. And then
you finally think the dude's going to go off on Walter.
Yeah.
It's like, man, what the fuck? And then he's like, and then Walter hugs him. I'm sorry, man. He's like, you know, fuck it. Let's go bowling.
Yeah.
And then they still never really bowl.
And they never really bowl. They sit the bowling out. They talk for a minute. And the dude goes to order him a White Russian at the bar. And the stranger's there again, and he tells him, you know, a little bit of dialogue, like, hey, you know, gives him some advice, so to speak. And the stranger tells us, well, I hope they win that bowling tournament. And that's kind of how the movie ends.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of theories over the years about the stranger and whether is he the Big Lebowski or is he Jeff Lebowski, the dude at an older age. There's theories of that. There's theories that the movie doesn't take place. It's just a stranger telling a story. You know, that because we were talking pre-show, you alluded to the whole Alice in Wonderland concepts of the film.
Yeah.
So that whole idea is that the whole movie's a dream, and that's why the dream sequences are dreams within dreams.
Yeah.
So there's all kinds of fan theories over the years, and the Coen brothers don't respond to any of it. They
no,
just say,
of
hey,
course not.
We made it is what it is. You know, they don't say anything about what they think. But they've done that with a lot of their films where people have these theories about their movies. Yeah.
So a quick correlation with the Alice in Wonderland theme, you know, theory, is that, you know, both Alice and the dude are kind of, you know, leisure-type people. They do things at their leisure. Alice, you know, at the beginning of Alice in Wonderland, wonders if she should make a daisy chain, if it's even worth the effort picking the daisies. So she doesn't want to even get up to pick the daisies, and she's just laying around. It's kind of concurrent with Jeff Bridges' character, the dude. They both take drugs in the movie that take their size, that change their size. There are big keys in both movies. One, whenever Jeff Bridges walks in, there's a key that was given to the Big Lebowski, key to the city. And whenever Alice in Wonderland shrinks, the key is that she's trying to get turns big now. They're both following the White Rabbit, you know, the dude follows Bunny. And she passes him by whenever he gets dumped for not liking the Eagles. She passes by in a car whose license plate in Italian means bunny or rabbit.
Right.
And Tara Reid is white. So she is essentially the White Rabbit. Alice goes down the rabbit hole. Jeff Bridges goes down the toilet hole. And one of the funnier jokes that you see early on is like, where's the money, Lebowski? I don't know. Let me take another look down there.
Right. And well, speaking of the Eagles, you know, Jeff Bridges ran into Glenn Frey years later at an event or a concert, and Glenn Frey thought that he really hated the Beatles, and they had a moment backstage of the show, and Bridges was like, no, man, it's cool. It was just a movie.
Yeah.
And I guess Fry, maybe in his old, who knows how many drugs Eagles did, thought that he really hated the Eagles.
That's funny.
You know, and it wasn't true.
The Eagles have the number one selling album ever worldwide. Yeah. Hotel California.
I personally don't find the Eagles that exciting. Yeah. I think they're an okay band, but
I think they were really good starting out, but then they started coming out with stuff like Desperado. And
there's probably 20 other classic rock bands I think are better than them.
Yeah.
Easily, but this isn't about the Eagles.
Yeah, yeah.
So do we have a favorite scene in the movie, Mary? You have a favorite scene?
Yes, the bathtub scene where the dude just sitting there,
He smokes a lot of joints in the movie too.
Yeah. Puffing on his little roach with the scissors and laying in his bathtub with all the candles and his relaxation tape going, and he's just sitting there smoking. All of a sudden, these denialists come in his apartment, start beating all his shit up, and he's like, hey, man, this is a private residence.
Yeah, this is a private residence. And
they
then...
they come in there, and they have a freaking ferret on a leash, but he's like, what is that, a marmot?
A marmot. Yeah, that's right. He does call it a marmot.
Yeah, a marmot. And then... they throw it all of a sudden, just throw it in the bathtub with him, and it's just like all flailing around. He's full of like, going on, what the hell's
like
going on?
Like it's
going
to eat his junk or something. Yeah. That's what I thought.
That's
like,
my favorite scene, personally.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Just cracks you up every time you see it.
I'm willing to bet that this is Mark's favorite scene, too, and that's the dream sequence after he has the White Russian.
That's like my second favorite.
I like the dream sequence, but
so
I also
weird.
Really like Goodman in this movie.
Okay.
Almost any scene he's in, as good as Bridges is as the dude, Goodman is just like, he's energy on screen in this film. And it's, I think this might be the first movie where I realized that Goodman was not just the guy from Roseanne, that he's a legitimately good actor.
Oh, yeah.
And he went on to a lot of good roles after this. And Walter's character makes the movie, the plot move forward. And he really believes in everything he talks about, Walter does. But they all do. Even the dude believes in his lifestyle and his philosophy of just go with the flow. And so I think Goodman's. I like the scene at the diner, between Goodman and Bridges.
Okay,
that's a really good moment in the film where they discuss their problem they're in, trying to figure it all out.
Yeah,
drinking the coffee.
Yeah,
he starts yelling about, I'm just sitting here drinking my coffee. I'm gonna stay.
And Bridges, as the dude in this, his lines, the way he delivers them sometimes, are so nonchalant, but then he'll say something, you're like, what? Like the whole thing about a paraquat. It's like, we're just, and there was not a whole lot of improvising in this film as much as people think it is. The Coen brothers really did write this stuff, mm-hmm. but Bridges makes it feel so naturally improvised because he's really good with the dialogue he's
giving. Yeah, he would ask for a lot of direction from the Coen brothers.
Right.
I mean, you know, between scenes, he said, you know, before he was going to the doctor, he's like, hey, you know, you think the dude would have smoked a joint while going, right. you know, over here? And, you know, if they said yes, he would take his knuckles and he'd rub them into his right. eyes, make it look like he had just, you know, lit up a doobie.
And, yeah. You know, a really good film. Let's talk about, it's become a big cult classic over the years, and it kind of started in 2002, about 4 or 5 years after the movie came out. They started the screenings of it. And in fact, one of the Coen, I can't remember if it was Joel or Ethan, even walked by a theater and saw the Big Lebowski poster walk up, and he goes, what's going on? He's like, oh, it's like a special screening quote along of the movie, and Coen, and they said he went in the back of the theater watching. He was amazed that all these people were getting into his film and quoting it along. And to this day, it's still going. Alamo Drafthouse plays this film a lot for quote-alongs. Or I think they even have breakfast parties and things for it. And it started developing a status where small theaters across the nation would play the movie. One theater played it as a special screening for a weekend, ended up playing 6 weeks at the theater for special screens.
Wow.
And it was a smaller theater, only had 200 people, but it sold out all the showings for like 6 weeks. So it's become a cult status that's had books written about it. When it first came out, critics didn't really like it, but now they've changed. Now critics really have embraced the film over the years. They realized that this was a missed opportunity to review a really good movie. It didn't do well at the box office, but
it's like $5 million.
Yeah, but it was early March. You know, nowadays movies can come out all year long and make money. 1998, it was a little different. If you weren't a summer blockbuster, you might not have made a lot of money. And this movie even has churches based on the dude. The Church of Deuterdade Saint, or I probably said it wrong.
Deuterdame
but they
Saints.
Call it Dudism.
Yeah.
And they believe in the philosophy of the dude, and his lifestyle, and it has over, apparently they claim to have over 220,000 members worldwide.
Wow. Matt, are you a member, man?
That
smoking those dubs in the bathtub?
Hey, you know, whatever you want to do, that's you can't apply that. That's your opinion, man, here. It's just your opinion, man. Yeah. I wanted an excuse to say it.
A very quotable film, as you just said. It's become, people quote this through memes, through the internet, through Twitter, whatever. I see, there's probably not a month those go by you don't see some mention of this movie somewhere. Mm-hmm. through one of your friends or through a Twitter account or something where someone's quoting this movie or using references from it.
Yeah, the meme with John Goodman's character, am I the only one around here who insert whatever here instead of, you know, who cares about the rules? And then you have Sam Elliott's character, the stranger who's at the bar.
Right.
And then you have, you know, of course, that's just your opinion, man.
And then we didn't even talk about John Turturro's character. He plays Jesus. It's like a Hispanic guy who's always wanting to do... He always makes, like, these gay comments to him, too. There's always these characters that are wanting to screw them in the ass.
Yeah, dude.
And the dude will always look at him like, what are you talking about, man?
Man.
And his character is all about the bowling tournament. He wants to fight them in the bowling... Or not fight them, but beat them in the bowling tournament that we never see happen.
Yeah.
You know, and apparently that Turturro asked the Coen brothers for permission. They have a script for a spinoff from his character.
Really?
And they're hoping to put it in production soon, but he's the only character in the movie because the Coen brothers swore they will never make a sequel. So, but they did give him permission. They did give him permission to use that character and do a spinoff based on this movie. So maybe that's coming. Apparently, it's based on the old 1970s film Going Places.
Okay.
And they might even call this Going Places also with John Turturro's Jesus character.
I know 10 years ago, he was asking the Coen brothers for a script.
Right.
And for them to start making something. I hope this goes somewhere because we really didn't get a lot of him. You know, we have some memorable moments with him, the you know, where he's like, you know, Jeff Bridges is like, Jesus. He's like, that's right, man. Calls him a bendejo.
Turturro's a really good actor who, unfortunately, is sometimes cast wrong in movies.
Yeah.
And directors don't always know how to use him. Like, a perfect example, and this movie is much better than Transformers, but in Transformers, he's so miscast in that movie.
Yeah.
He tries to play this quirky, weird FBI cop, and that's just not him. He's such a good actor, he's just cast wrong sometimes in movies.
Secret Window, that was a different... Yeah. That was an odd casting for him, too, as a bad guy, or a weird apparition of Jeff's, why can't I think of his name? Jack Sparrow's, Johnny Depp. I was like, my wife likes him. That was a weird casting. But yeah, there's some movies where I liked him in Anger Management, even though Anger Management wasn't that great of a film overall. Mr. Deeds, that was okay, I guess, if you liked Mr. Deeds.
But
to your point.
Coen Brothers movies, I know it's your favorite Coen Brother movie, Mary, easily. I think it is mine, too. I do like True Grit, No Country for Old Men. But this is a more fun film, a little more accessible in some ways. Not that True Grit isn't accessible, but it's just like they're more serious.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's fun to have fun watching a movie.
More accessible than Burn After Reading.
Burn After Reading was so disappointing to me because it was coming off of No Country for Old Men. You were expecting their follow-up to be really great, and Burn After Reading just was boring. I didn't like it at all, you know. And that is the Coen brothers. You either like some of their movies or you don't like some of their movies. But I think anyone who's a fan of film is going to like at least one movie they made.
Oh yeah,
you know they're not like Paul Anderson, the guy who made Magnolia and There Will Be Blood.
Mm-hmm.
His movies are either
weird
and you like him or you just aren't a fan of his. You know, at least the Coen brothers do make stuff that's for cinema, and they make some really good movies. They're going to go down history as two of our great directors of all time.
I agree.
You know, any final thoughts on Big Lebowski before we get into today's news and stuff?
No, it was good, you know, reviewing the movie, and I'm probably going to have to catch another screening whenever they show it at Alamo Drafthouse. Unfortunately, they closed the one in Vintage Park.
Yeah,
so
we only have the one way out there now.
Yeah.
Apparently, they're building more. I just don't know when. That Alamo Drafthouse has plans to build three or four more in Houston.
Yeah, I like their view on how movies should be viewed and enjoyed, and definitely hope we get another one close by. Yeah.
So final thoughts, Mary, one of your favorite films?
It's The Dude, man. I mean, how could you not like it?
The Dude Abides.
Deuterino.
All right, well, we got some news briefs. You're sticking around for the whole show, Mary? I mean, you can.
Yeah.
Do I have to leave?
No, we're not kicking you out.
Is it closing time?
No, we're just asking, you know, because we're polite gentlemen.
So we're going to start with a lot of X-Men news. Okay, first of all, we got a trailer for Dark Phoenix.
Yes.
Which is going to tell the story of Jean Grey becoming Phoenix. The trailer isn't bad. It's kind of like, okay. At the same time, with these X-Men films, it feels like if they're going to reboot this through Disney in a couple years, it seems like they're pointless, but Fox has already made them and trying to get them out. And the movie was supposed to be out in February, and 2 days after the trailer came out, guess what? We're pushing the movie to June. So it's like...
Yep.
Will people go see this? I'm sure it will, but it just feels like people are ready to move on, ready for Disney to buy the X-Men.
Yeah.
That feels the response I got from the trailer online the other day.
Some of the comments I've seen is like, oh, okay, so we're basically redoing X3.
Right.
And I'm like, oh, well...
In a sense.
Yeah, I think the story will looks like it's more accurate. You have more Cyclops in this one.
Yeah.
You know, the actor that was originally playing Cyclops, he wanted to do Once Upon a Time. So, you know, he ended up not being able to do X3 in the role that he probably should have been doing, you know, right. more prominent presence of Cyclops
in that film. Miles Teller playing Cyclops and the film looks good. It looks okay. I hope they do it right. It still feels like an X-Men movie without Wolverine. Just feels lacking to me.
Yeah.
And that's how it's felt since Hugh Jackman decided to retire. I felt watching Apocalypse was the same way, even though they did have the Wolverine cameo in it.
Yeah, that was cool.
It just feels like I'm ready to move on and get to Disney. And especially after this other announcement, the producers of Gambit say it's going to be a romantic comedy?
No.
What?
No.
What?
How do you make Gambit a romantic comedy?
I mean, he had some, you know, remarks here and there to Rogue.
Gambit was a player.
Like, Michelle.
Yeah, he's pretty sexy.
You know, he's New Orleans, you know, he always uses the French talk.
Right. And I hope this movie doesn't get made. I just want Gambit to go to Disney, let them do it. Because first off, nothing against Channing Tatum. He's fine. As an actor, he's fine. But he's not Gambit.
No, he's not.
You know, you need more... skinny, muscular, with more of a suave to you. You know?
Jason David Frank.
Someone can actually act.
Jason David Frank's brother.
You don't have to act to do Power Rangers.
Bob Frank. I don't know.
No, I think younger, more just, in their mid-20s or so, somebody that they can build a franchise on. Gambit's one of my favorite X-Men characters.
You can't screw up Gambit.
So I'm being really picky about this movie. I don't want them to screw it up if it ever gets made. You know, so we'll see. And then I guess when they announced all these release date changes, Fox said they're moving Alita Battle Angel back into next summer. Also, I really want to see that movie, and they keep pushing it back.
That one looks good.
They announced a PG-13 cut of Deadpool 2. Apparently, it's going to be in theaters this December.
What?
It's kind of like why?
Why? You know?
I mean, I guess if people want to take their kids to see it, but Deadpool is just not kid appropriate, even in a PG-13 manner.
No.
And Deadpool 2 was okay. I don't really want to sit through it again in a PG-13 version. It just feels like, why didn't you just put that on the Blu-ray release, you know, or something?
Sometimes studios will do anything to get more money, expand their market. And, a lot of people who probably only should be watching PG-13 movies probably saw the R-rated films. Like, right. You're, 15, 16, 17-year-olds, you know that they probably saw Deadpool 2.
So that's all the X-Men news. Now, next we've got, we forgot to talk about this last week. Of course, they're making this Joker movie with being directed by Todd Phillips and starring Joaquin Phoenix. And it seems a lot of people are very optimistic about it. They don't know what to expect. People kind of feel like, why are we getting a Joker movie? We don't need to know his origin.
Mm-hmm.
But then people are optimistic because it is Todd Phillips, who's a good director, and Joaquin Phoenix is a really good actor.
Yeah.
And they released some footage of him this week in the test makeup, and some shots showed up online. I really like the way he looks. It's kind of a mix of Jack Nicholson and Heath Ledger's versions. Yeah. I like the purple suit. I like the makeup without the scars. It's kind of a wait and see on this. It comes out next October, about a year from now. I think Phoenix is a very capable actor of pulling off the role. And I think he's in a tough position that anyone who is going to make this movie after Heath Ledger's Joker is going to be scrutinized.
Yep.
Because people are always going to compare it to Heath. And I guess we just wait and see on this.
Yeah. Yeah, and I like the memes that are coming out about it. Whenever you have Heath Ledger's Joker on one side and then Joaquin Phoenix Joker on the other side, and it says, whenever you pick the same player as player one.
Right, and it's different costumes.
Yeah, and I can, the hair is very Heath Ledger, like slick back,
right.
Kind of grungy, and then the makeup is very kind of bright. And
Nicholson.
Yeah, Nicholson's. Yeah. the laughable Joker, the funny one.
I certainly like his look better than I like Jared Leto's look in Suicide Squad. Absolutely. I was never a fan of Jared Leto's Joker in that movie.
It make
was
him just a gangster.
Too gangster, too weird.
Yeah.
Nothing against Leto. He's a really good actor. I just didn't like the look and the feel they went with him for that film.
Yeah, I think it was bad direction.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And of course, Leto, I don't know if he's ever going to play a Joker again or which direction DC's going, because Leto is going to make Morbius for Sony.
Yeah.
He's going to make a Morbius living vampire movie. So who knows if we'll ever see Leto's Joker again in that version. Maybe we'll move forward with Phoenix and put him in the DC universe. But then again, this is supposed to be like a standalone film that has nothing to do with the DC universe. So we'll see. We've got news that Kathleen Kennedy has been extended for 3 years in her contract, and I got in a good argument with these guys over the last... People think that she shouldn't be given a contract extension because they didn't like The Last Jedi. Newsflash, buddy. This, you don't give a shit whether you like The Last Jedi. They don't give a shit whether you hated Solo. All they care to know is that Last Jedi made $1 billion worldwide. So did The Force Awakens and Rogue One. She's made money for that studio. Going back to the 1980s, people forget she produced the Indiana Jones films.
Yep.
Oh, did she?
Yeah, she's been working for Lucasfilm.
Jurassic Park.
The Jurassic Park film. She's been
She ain't going anywhere.
She's been a long time, highly successful producer in Hollywood. From a business sense, it makes sense to extend her contract and to keep letting her make Star Wars movies for Lucasfilm. And arguably, I think she's done a great job.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think she's done a bad job. And she's, she wasn't, directing the films.
No.
Rian Johnson, was pretty much given free rein. And, he had his, idea of what, Luke should be. And, it may not be the one you wanted, but it makes sense over time. And, we've come to, I think a lot of us have, come to enjoy the film a little bit.
That's the biggest argument. All these fanboys, they all argue, well, that's not the way Luke should be, or that's not the way this should be. Who says? Because you said it? That's the biggest argument they give online.
And it's the warp speed, that makes it, the guy's like, oh, that made pretty much every star battle irrelevant. They could have just done that to the Death Star. And they're like, oh, yeah, because there's tons of people just lining up to die.
Right.
I think, too, unfortunately, a lot of these hardcore fanboys that have their mindset only one way, I think they have a problem with a woman doing it, too. Like, it's... Unfortunately, I really feel that, because a lot of their comments that you can see online, you can go look them all up, they're just man-hating comments. Like,
what would she know, or something like that? I'm sure there's some of that.
I mean, she obviously knows a hell of a lot, because first off, she's making millions and millions of dollars, and they're all successful, whether you like it or not. I mean,
Solo at the end of the day, it fell short at the box office, but it's only... I say only, but it only fell $50 to $60 million short of what they were expecting it to make. Through Blu-ray rentals and things like that, Solo will probably make its money back. So,
probably.
And it ended up not being as big of a failure as they let it on to be, just because it didn't make the kind of money the other Star Wars films made. But I truly believe that was a bit of backlash from Last Jedi, and probably released it too soon after.
Yeah.
Because Solo is a really good movie, and now it seems like I've seen a lot of feedback of Twitter talk this week, and people are like going, oh, I wish I would have gone and seen this. Well, no shit. The internet told you it was good, and you didn't go see it.
Heck yeah, right? Man. And that was a good time for us. We got some cool stuff. I was like, why are these tickets so expensive? And then we got all this free crap. And I was like, okay, this makes sense.
Yeah, I was a little jealous.
And
brought all this stuff
up. But, good to Kathleen Kane. She deserves it. And I hope they keep making really great Star Wars films. And and I hope we get a sequel to Solo and get another great spinoff. And I hope they hire a female director. Watching Rogue One, it was really good. But bringing Catherine Bigelow, who directed Zero Dark Thirty and The Hurt Locker, how cool would she make a Star Wars war movie?
Oh, man, that'd be awesome.
As good as her war movies were, bring her in for a Star Wars war
movie. Dude, if they made a Battlefront movie?
On the edge of your seat movies,
She's a great female director. Patty Jenkins did wonderful with Wonder Woman. Bring her in to make a really solid film. I mean, there's great female directors out there, and people need to stop being so chauvinist at the female running your Star Wars films.
Yeah, I agree.
And because they're good movies. So lastly, our last bit of news we forgot to talk about last week, of course, the Creed 2 trailer came out.
Yes.
And as much as it sounded cliche to have Adonis Creed fight Drago's son, you watch that trailer, you're like, it makes you want to like punch stuff. You're like, let's go. That new trailer was really good.
I mean, whenever he's like, I can't back down from this fight. He's like, that's what your father said, and he died right here in my arms.
And then they make it, everyone thought it was going to be a revenge flick, but if you watch this trailer, it's clearly about family and Adonis making the right decisions, because it looks like him and Tessa Thompson's character have a child now.
Yeah.
So it's more than just a boxing match. He has to think about his family and his future and everything, and for it's more personal for Stallone. That scene in the trailer where Rocky and Drago stare at each other, man, I mean, how could that not get you?
Yep.
You
know? Yeah, and he's talking about, he's like, I sustain injuries from that fight that still affect me today. Yeah. And I was like, wow.
This just looks really good. And Michael B. Jordan is such a great young actor, as we already know. Creed was a big surprise of how good it was. And this just looks to continue that. No Ryan Coogler directing, different director this time. But the film looks like it's going to get it right for a second time. And continue on with the legacy of Rocky and what the characters and that family of characters is about, you know. So I'm looking forward to that one.
Yeah, I agree.
So that looks like a really good, fun film. So that's it for the news. I do have a couple of shout-outs real quick. And I owed this lady a shout-out a few weeks ago, and I apologize, but she's been a big supporter of the show on Twitter and stuff. Her name is Yolanda Mazzin. I may have said her name wrong, but she does she does paintings in New York City.
That's awesome.
She does a lot of humanitarian work, and she gives her paintings to firefighters and first responders from 9/11. She was in New York when 9/11 happened.
Oh, wow.
And so she does this work for charity work. And she asked me, hey, could you mention it on the show? She would like, I don't know if you might listen to the show, it's in the media, but she would like to find somebody, maybe pick up her story on media news outlets and stuff. And she does some really great work, and she's always retweeting and supporting the show. And so a shout out to her for the great work she does. And she's on our Twitter feed, and you see her on there. Follow her. She does some really neat stuff, some really neat artwork. And keep up the good work, Yolanda. And also, let me give a quick shout out to the Bayou City Geeks, who Jason reached out to me this week and talked about our show and how he liked the show. And he wants to do a crossover with us, so hopefully we can get together with him. And I can't think of his co-host name, but I was talking to Jason through their Twitter. And really nice guys here locally. They do a video YouTube show here locally, and they were at Fandemic, and we just didn't run into him. But I saw Jason added me on Facebook, and I know I met him before. Like, I know I've shook his hand or something. So shout out to those guys. But so let's preview next week's movie, as we're going to start off our Halloween kickoff. I still don't have an official name for it, but we're going to do Halloween movies all month, or movies that relate to Halloween anyways. And we're going to kick it off with a couple of classics. We're going to do a double feature for y'all. We're going to do Universal Monsters classics. We're going to talk The Creature from the Black Lagoon and The Wolfman.
Couldn't explain it, but there it was, alive in the deep, deep waters of the Amazon, a throwback to a creature that had existed 100 million years ago, immensely strong and destructive. A woman's beauty, the bait that brought it out of its lair. See underwater thrills never photographed before. See titanic underwater battles never dreamed of before in this most terrifying of the science fiction adventures.
This is James O'Barr on Rebel Radio. Thanks for listening. We'll be right back.
jugular.
Is that the way Jenny Williams was killed?
Yes. Find something?
Animal tracks.
Whoever is bitten by a werewolf and lives becomes a werewolf himself.
Oh, don't hand me that. You're just wasting your time.
The wolf bit you, didn't he?
Yeah. Yeah, he did.
You wouldn't want to run away with a murderer, would you?
Oh, Larry, you're not. You know you're not.
I killed Bela. I killed Richardson. If I stay here any longer, you can't tell who'll be next.
And these movies, of course, they're old.
Yes,
but they're classic.
They are classic.
And I felt like during our Halloween month, you got to kick it off with a couple of movies that you don't have the horror movies today if you don't have these original Universal monster classics, which have set the stage for everything to come after. Everything is influenced by it. These are really, really great movies. They're simply made. They're made back in a time when films were made from the heart, from hard work, people putting sets together, costumes. Incredible makeup work done on the Wolfman. Why is this? Lon Chaney, the actor who played him. Just really well acted films, and they depended on characters and they depended on dialogue and really good acting to bring these scary monsters to life that still stand the test of time today. We're still getting movies made about these characters, and it's going to be fun to talk about these classic films.
No, I agree. Especially, you know, seeing the Creature from the Black Lagoon. Seeing the Shape of Water this year, I'm going to have to see the original one because I don't think I've seen anything other than Monster Squad. Yeah.
I mean, these movies, I mean, at first you watch them and you're used to modern film and it takes a bit to get used to them, but you realize how good they are. Like, The Wolfman is a favorite of mine. I like all the Universal classic movies and they're really fun to watch. And, of course, they're shot in black and white because that's what they had back then.
Yeah.
But remarkably well-done movies, so it should be fun to talk about. And we're not going to reveal the other Halloween movies we're doing yet. You're going to have to wait a week at a time or follow us on social media where I'm going to put up a graphic that tells you the movies we're doing.
Yeah, and you'll see the road to All Hallows Eve or something. Is that what we call it?
No, wait.
The road to All Hallows Eve.
I don't know. We already did the journey to Force Awakens. We gotta do things.
But this is a road. This isn't a journey. It's a road.
So, but follow us. Go to rebelradiopodcast.com. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram and YouTube and all that stuff so you can keep up with the latest that's going on the show. Buy a t-shirt there. That'd be nice.
Yeah.
We haven't sold a t-shirt in a long time.
Yeah, we haven't.
You know, so we need someone to buy a t-shirt.
Please do.
You know, or we'll send Arnold after you to kick your ass.
Yeah, we'll send Arnold right after he gets done. You know, taking pictures.
Making
with,
another Arnold, you know, with Comics with Arnold. He must be filming a movie.
He probably is.
He hasn't done a Comics with Arnold like in a month.
I saw him take a picture with
Linda
Hamilton.
He's filming Terminator 7 or 8 or 9 or whatever Terminator number it's on by now.
Where he goes back in time to stop, like, global warming.
Does he have a beer gut?
Yeah, beer
probably.
Gut.
Probably. And he's old. And
yeah, he has a big, like, handlebar mustache, and he asks what IPAs are on tap.
So that's coming next week on the Rebel Radio Podcast. And Mary, thank you for joining us.
You're
today.
Welcome.
You made it through? You survived?
Yeah, I survived.
Yes.
Was I not supposed to? Was I supposed to implode or something?
You get all nervous, your hands get sweaty.
My hands are not sweaty, actually.
But you did good. But thank you, as always, for listening. This has been Mark.
This is Matt.
And this is Mary.
And as always,
just
go
there and do it.
This is Chuck Huber. You're listening to the Rebel Radio Podcast. Stop being so awesome.
This is Ming Chen from AMC's Comic Book Man. I love Houston. I love podcasting. But what I really love is the Rebel Radio Podcast.